Welcome to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We have such a great show for you today. So many things to bring you, including a conversation we just finished a few minutes ago with acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey, who entered the race today. We'll be bringing you that conversation shortly, along with an Ask the Doctors. The number there is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have two medical professionals here to answer your coronavirus questions. But we're going to start in the arts and culture world, and I want to ask you to close your eyes for a minute. Close your eyes and try to imagine all the materials, artifacts, letters, housed at the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library. Now, did you imagine an archive of materials from Ernest Hemingway? Well, it turns out that you should have. There is a rich store of handwritten letters, typed manuscript drafts, photos, and that helped film directors Ken Burns and Lynn Novick tell a newer, more nuanced story about the author. Their documentary, Hemingway, premieres on PBS this week. Parts 2 and 3 air tonight and tomorrow at 8 p.m. Well, we sat down with Lynn Novick and with Hillary Justice, who is the Hemingway scholar in residence at the JFK Library, who consulted on the film. And I began by asking Lynn why it felt important to re-examine the life of Hemingway now, in 2021, as we go back and question many of our cultural touchstones.
You know, the film is coming out now in 2021, but Ken and I, along with our producer Sarah Botstein and Jeff Ward, our writer, have been working on it for 6 or 7 years. And I personally have been thinking about the idea of a documentary about Hemingway's life and work for more than 25 years. So it is interesting, and just, I'm not sure what to say about the fact that it's coming out in this moment, except that we could not be more pleased about that, because as you say, we are examining our history with a different perspective. We are looking at the icons of the past and, you know, questioning, should this person be on a pedestal? Should this person be erased? Should we still read this writer? Should we still take this art seriously? And Hemingway is right in the middle of that in a very interesting way. And we wanted to make the film because we understand what an important writer he is. He's one of the most important writers in American literature, for sure, and perhaps in world literature. He changed the way people write, and his fingerprints are all over everything to this day, you know, more than 60 years since he passed away. So his legacy is there, but his personal life and the myths around it are very, very problematic.
Hillary, I want to bring you in here. Hemingway was well known or reputed for some things: alcoholism, a kind of Teddy Roosevelt masculinity, being somewhat abusive in his approach to women, struggled with mental illness in his later years. You've really delved into the source materials, gotten to know him. What is our biggest misconception about Ernest Hemingway?
I think the biggest misconception people have about Hemingway doesn't so much have to do with, you know, his writing. I think anyone who reads Hemingway's writing, you can't help but be affected by it. The biggest misconception that people have, though, is his own attitude toward his work, toward his writing. There's a famous mis-saying that flies around the internet every so often, and it's attributed to Hemingway, and it's "write drunk, edit sober." And that is not how he worked. He was such a meticulous wordsmith from the time he was very, very young. He always took his writing very seriously. No detail was too small, but he'd rework it 3 or 4 times, even a single punctuation mark. He'd go back and forth, a comma or a question mark. What had the exact shade of nuance that he was reaching for as a writer? He was perhaps the most disciplined and careful craftsman with words that the 20th century had.
So, you know, I think of Hemingway as belonging to Paris, Spain, Havana. I was surprised to even find he kind of belongs to Michigan after watching the documentary. But we're Radio Boston. The reason we're doing this is that so much of the source material is actually here at the JFK Library. So what is, Hillary, Boston's claim to some piece of the Hemingway legacy? Why is it here?
Well, it's actually here because there were two tragedies back to back in the early 1960s. One of them was Ernest Hemingway's suicide, and one of them was the assassination of President Kennedy. And this left two widows with a responsibility to their husband's legacy. Mary Hemingway was in possession of all of her husband's papers. and their personal photographs collections stretching back, you know, to his parents' photographs in the 1890s. And she was looking for somewhere to place them where they would be cared for and people could access them, and sort of she could ensure the longevity of Hemingway's impact on American culture. So she reached out to Jacqueline Kennedy when she read that Mrs. Kennedy was putting together her husband's presidential library. So the Boston connection is really the Kennedy connection. And then this relationship between these two grieving, powerful women who found themselves doing almost exactly the same thing at exactly the same time. And Mrs. Hemingway reached out to Mrs. Kennedy and said, would you be willing to accept the Ernest Hemingway papers as part of the presidential library? And Mrs. Kennedy wrote back and said she'd be honored.
So Lynn, those materials allow a kind of revealing and a depth of content. In preparing for this, after we had both watched the documentary, our producer Walt Wuthman noticed, he said that you sort of used drafts to create action in the movie, sort of to Hillary's point about how meticulous Hemingway was. I want to play this part of the film. It describes how we can see from these archives that Hemingway rewrote the iconic end to A Farewell to Arms 47 times. So here's the ending where the protagonist, Lieutenant Henry, is facing the death of his lover and their baby, and it's read by Jeff Daniels.
I went to the door of the room. You can't come in now, one of the nurses said. Yes, I can, I said. You can't come in yet. You get out, I said. The other one, too. But after I had got them out and shut the door and turned off the light, it wasn't any good. It was like saying goodbye to a statue. After a while, I went out, left the hospital, and walked back to the hotel in the rain.
Lynn, you hear something like that, and it's so brilliantly read there. You hear the staccato and the short sentiments, right, with all the grief in them. To discover that that was done 47 times, talk about the art of discovery when you have so much material to work with and how it helps you tell a story.
Yeah, well, we really wanted, and we weren't sure how at the beginning of the project, to bring to life how hard Hemingway worked, as Hillary was saying, and to show the process of revision and even starting with a blank piece of paper and writing something down and crossing it out and typing it and crossing it out again. And, you know, in the movies, it's often kind of like the crumpled paper in the wastebasket that's supposed to, you know, represent that. But we really wanted to show it because these words, that's his art. So, you know, you have to literally show it. And we were so grateful that the library and the collection, with Hillary's, you know, direction, helped us find these drafts and pick the ones to show. And then we actually were able to, through digital animation, remove his handwriting from a typewritten page and then put it back on. So you could see the crossing outs and the trying again and playing with the punctuation and changing one word. And just to see the dedication and the kind of trial and error and the process by which he arrived at the beautiful passage we just heard, it took a long time. And that's just one example. I mean, if you could just expand from that to everything he wrote, you can see an artist dedicated to such a degree to getting it right and leaving something indelible.
Hillary, when you walk into the archives, I confess, I almost imagine that you could stand in the middle of the room and hear all these whispers coming up from all the paper. Is that how it feels? And what does it whisper to you?
It is definitely a tremendous feeling of goosebumps. The first time, you know, the research archivist brings you the box and you pull out a folder and you open it and you see these words in Hemingway's handwriting, and it's profound. You know, Hemingway is, in some ways, as a Nobel Prize winner in literature, he's on a pedestal, but you forget that he was a 22-year-old kid writing stories that he didn't know would ever be published. He hoped they'd be published. He hoped he'd be a great writer, but he was just starting out. And so the pages, just what they whisper to me is actually, listen to what they have to say.
Lynn, we are in a time of reckoning in America, especially about race and who tells stories, whose stories get told. Last week, 140 filmmakers signed a letter to PBS criticizing PBS for that lack of diversity, too much reliance on a small set of filmmakers. Mm-hmm. They mentioned Ken Burns. They mentioned this documentary. I want to note they were clear they weren't calling out Burns. They were calling out PBS, who, according to NPR, has said it's going to take a, quote, hard look, end quote, at what they're doing. As someone who has shepherded so many projects forward now, we've talked to you about more than one here. How do you think the industry does a better job telling more and more diverse stories? How do we get 6 hours, say, on a story of Asian American history as advocated, as filmmaker Grace Lee has advocated for? What's the step there?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I just want to say that Ken and I and everyone we work with wholeheartedly concurs with the objectives of the letter and the filmmakers' demands that PBS needs to have more room and be more inclusive and welcome more diverse voices, and that more diverse stories need to be told. That's absolutely true, and that's a positive, important step for our society to take, and it's long overdue. And I also just recognize that there's also forces beyond the world of PBS or the infrastructure ecosystem of PBS that play a part in this, which is access to funding beyond PBS. PBS doesn't actually provide most of our funding, but they do provide important funding for many other filmmakers. It's also promotion. It's also the means of production. You know, there's just systemic entrenched barriers that make it very, very difficult for diverse voices to be heard and to tell their stories. And that's not okay. And we all need to work harder.
All right. In our last couple of minutes, I want to come back to Hemingway and the documentary itself. Lynn, it's 6 hours and there's a lot in there. And one of the things that length of time seems to allow you to do is play with what we think about Hemingway. You dive into his feminine side, his desire even to do role play, his relationship with women. What is something that those who will spend their evenings with this come out of it on the other side saying, you know, wow, I didn't realize?
Well, I don't want to give away too much. I
hope not too much. No, just
watch,
a little.
But yes, but I think we can give away. We can definitely sort of open that door because, you know, the myth of Hemingway and the public persona is so kind of brittle in a way, you know, and it does obscure who he really was, but he wanted it that way. And so once you penetrate through that, you see, and this is partly from his literary work, but also from his private letters and from people around him talking about what he was like. A much more vulnerable, a much more empathic, much more sensitive and sometimes anxious person, and a quiet intellectual who liked to stay home and read books and listen to music. You know, this is not the persona that we think of striding across the African plains, shooting, you know, elephants and buffalo, which he also did with great gusto. So, you know, it's the film, I think we try to kind of both explain who he the persona that he created, and then to peel back the layers so you really get to know him as best as we ever can, someone from the past. And one of the really interesting aspects of his personality and his inner life or intimate life is his masculinity and his relationship to that. And I don't think that in his time, the words that people would have used would be the same as what we would use today to talk about androgyny, gender fluidity, role-playing, as you said, you know, and kind of pushing up against or pushing back against the constraints of the conventional masculine identity. That's really interesting. And it's aspects of his experience and way of thinking about the world and his personal life that was certainly new to us.
Lynn Novick, co-director of Hemingway, and Hilary Justice, the Hemingway Scholar in Residence at the JFK Library. Parts 2 and 3 of the documentary air tonight on PBS and tomorrow night.